Hey everyone, it's Jess. Today's podcast episode contains discussions of abuse and sexual violence. Please listen at your own discretion. And if you or someone you know is a survivor of violence, you can visit RAINN.org, RAINN.org. Or if you're in the tri-state area, CBTCNYC.org to access free treatment and assistance. Welcome to Conversations Around Conversations about the conversations we just had on the Clubhouse app earlier today.
This is Tech Theater, Clubhouse Conversations. It's a podcast to continue that conversation. Every week on Clubhouse, Tuesdays at 12:55 Eastern, if you want to come hang out, we have these incredible discussions with brilliant people who sit at the intersection of technology and theater.
We always walk away from these Clubhouse talks with so many thoughts. We never have time to get into everything. So we decided to make this here podcast, reach even more of our friends and collaborators, and have some more chats. I'm Jess, CEO and co-founder of Broadway Unlocked. My background is in the theater. I love creating it, watching it, and of course, talking about it.
And I'm Joe, co-founder of Broadway Unlocked. I like to bring a tech perspective to this tech theater conversation. My background is in the startup technology world.
So with that, welcome to Tech Theater Tuesday. This week on Clubhouse, we dug more deeply into a question that has come up for us quite a bit recently as folks at the intersection of theater and technology and therefore the future. And that question really is, what are we coming back to? As Jermaine Blackwell, our cause and creative director, posed to all of us, did this year of reckoning leave us with any lasting or impactful change?
On the hopeful side, we had a chat about the Times article announcing that David Geffen is paying for everyone to go to the drama school forever.
Pew, pew, pew.
More air horns always. And on the less optimistic side, we worked through three articles highlighting pay inequalities at theaters, a sexual assault allegation that led everyone to leave that theater but the person accused, and the lack of diversity in upcoming theater seasons.
Womp, 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 womp.
Womp indeed.
I'm now our Foley artist too.
I love it.
Can I make a request for where we start this conversation today?
Yes, please.
Because I know usually we throw the ball on Joe's court if you're a listener of this podcast. And today, especially, he was like super, super quiet. I mean, and I know I always say that, but he's like really quiet. But
yeah, the minute count on this outside of intro and outro was zero.
Yeah.
0 minutes.
Of Joe speaking today. But I have a request just because this hits so close to home with a lot of the work that I've done, and I don't feel like we spent enough time talking about it or just couldn't. But this freaking sexual assault at this freaking theater, this was reported. If you go to our Twitter at BWY Unlocked, we've got the link up there from today, Tuesday, July 6th. This theater in Chicago, I think. The guy...
Rhode Island.
Sorry, I mixed up. Chicago was lack of diversity. Rhode Island is the theater with the sexual assault.
All states are trash.
The recap of the article is, guy produces theater. Guy somehow parlays that into a 501c3 theater. Guy crafts sexual assault policy or something. Theater has no board, which... Please, let's get back to that, because I'm still flabbergasted. Employee accuses artistic director of sexual assault. No board means no action. So three of their employees end up resigning because their artistic director's like, I'm not going anywhere. And they can't do anything about it. No one can do anything. And Jermaine's question to us today in Clubhouse, you know, was a lot about allyship. And what's his catchphrase? Everyone's an ally till Telsey comes calling. I'm obsessed with that. Telsey's a casting director. And yeah, anyway.
I was going to ask for the explanation. Yeah. So thanks for preempting it. I still have questions. But
okay. So his question really was like, is it good enough for someone to walk away and shouldn't you stay and fight? And I was like, oh, yo, let's clear back the onion peel layer things here, because we can't even talk about their actions until we like talk about the fact that this guy built a system that couldn't be beat. Like, so I have lots of questions. How can you have a nonprofit without a board? How can that remain in 501c3 with tax designation in the wake of this somehow without a board? How can these three people quit this? And how, like, do people go buy tickets still for this? I'm flapper doodled. I don't even know.
Wow. We're inventing words to capture how flabbergasted Jess is right now. And I love it.
Yeah.
This was one of those times where I was like, oh, like, all of us need, like, there's not enough detail and information in this one article.
Yeah.
And like, is there even enough information out there? Do we all need to become investigative reporters and go dig into what was going on at this theater company? Because like, I feel like there were way more questions than there were even possible to have answers.
Yeah, you couldn't have a conversation about it.
Yeah, and all of us were like throwing things around. And
all of
like,
us but Joe, because he didn't talk.
So yeah, there were a lot of like things flying around out of everyone's mouth. And I just kept feeling like, wait, what is actually happening here? Like your points about the 501c, like how does this entity even exist? Is it even actually that? And like, none of that changes at the end of the day that this person clearly shouldn't be in a position of power, but is in a position of power and is abusing that power amongst all of the other people who are inside of this organization. And it was so messed up that the only thing that these people were able to do, the other employees, was to resign. Like,
right.
It did sound, again, unanswerable questions at this point. I don't know what actions those people took. And if they did try to fight from the inside, like Jermaine was sort of expressing, like, no, stay on, fight it, make it better for the other people who are also there. Maybe they did do all of that. Maybe they did everything they possibly could.
Oh, yeah.
The only thing left to do was to make as big a splash as possible, cannonballing into the deep end by quitting in a fiery firestorm and having that article then written, having us now talking about it, which got me to thinking about, like, is that the only recourse these days is like public outrage and you just have to make the biggest stink possible, the loudest voice possible, the most social media eyeballs to get anything done? Because obviously there's like no, you know, given that this is like an entity that should have a board, but didn't have a board and clearly no one's checking and like, whatever, all the issues that came with the fact that he was able to set up this situation for himself in which he could sexually abuse someone, but still retain power. It's like, cool, none of that's working clearly because it allowed for this situation to happen. So is all that's possible left is to like make a big fuss and a lot of noise and get people rallied up around it. And like, that's terrible.
I think the answer I think is yes. If there is like actually no, in this situation, no other, no other recourse that is quick, you know, like is sort of impactful and happens without dragging this through. I don't even know where do you go to like contest someone's 501c3 status and get them dethroned as the artistic director of their company that they shittily put together.
It's probably like one person inside of the, like the state government that like deals with all of these. And it's like that person. Yeah, exactly.
But I do think it's worth noting that like, I don't know that that's comparable to saying like, is our only recourse these days in all situations to be the loudest voice, right?
Yeah, a bit hyperbolic, but
yeah. But and the other thing that I think about too on the like, just in case you are just a new listener, I've spent the last decade of my life advocating for and helping to raise funds to make sure that survivors of violence are given free treatment. And look, can I tell you the other thing that is makes me, I can't think about it too hard because it's so depressing. When you are a survivor or you work with survivors or, you know, you support an organization that does this work, it is very clear very quickly, as most people know, even just from reading the news. The mandate is believe survivors because people rarely believe survivors, right? Just like our psychology, for whatever reason, will quickly lead us as people in positions of power or dominant culture or whatever it is to just like not believe someone when they say that. So you get that. That's the first hurdle when you're a survivor of violence is like, just like fucking no one believes you, period. Like maybe a couple people, whatever. Then you got the second hurdle, which is like when you're going to a court of law or like a university board or you're bored at your theater because an act of misconduct has been registered, to prove that is 50 times harder than even to just believe someone. Right? Because it's a lot of he said, she said, right? Often these acts take place without any witnesses and it's just all, it's bad news, right? So you, now you've got this like double whammy in front of you. And so what's so depressing about this article is that when I was actually reading through it, they investigated and found credible like evidence of sexual assault and misconduct, which is like pretty fucking hard to get through and still nothing was done. And this guy is still running a theater. Like, what's left? Like, I guess just cool. you're just a fucking victim of a survivor of sexual violence. And like, there's no, we can't, no one believes you. It's really hard to prove. And even when they do, doesn't matter.
Yeah. I didn't even like, I never considered that there's so many of those barriers that you were just talking about that make it so like you question even bringing it up, even talking about it, like convincing yourself that it didn't happen or that it's not that big a deal or whatever it might be. Like all of those things that women talk about when they're going through that process of like, do I want to take this on? Because there is a whole system stacked up against me
yep.
that I'm going to have to fight through and I'm going to be branded and stigmatized. And I feel like one of the like the calls throughout that has been like, no, it's important to stand up for it. And like, it's important for accountability. And like this situation and this story has just like taken accountability totally out of the equation.
Right.
Like it's
right.
no longer part of the motivating factor, part of the support, part of the hopeful endpoint of someone sort of like getting some sort of resolution and the hopeful, like, you know, the feelings of being able to get past it that can hopefully come with that mm-hmm. are just like taken away. And it's like,
it's horrifying.
You just went through all of those trials and tribulations and it was proven out. Oh, but because of a technicality that, you know, you can always find if you're looking for, like, if you want to find a technicality, like you can probably find one if you're in power.
Yeah.
And yeah. And so there's no accountability for this guy. He's just still there at the head of this theater. And maybe, you know, we're looking in a slightly shortened like time frame. Like if we expand this out a year, does this theater go under because of the pop culture sort of uproar?
Yeah, it'd have to be that. Because another fun fact about the horseshitness that is, you know, surviving sexual assault is that court cases take upwards of 2 to 3 years. Someone I know was accused and convicted of sexual assault, and it is now, we're 2 years and he's still not been to court. I obviously am not speaking with authority. This was me investigating what the fuck is happening with that, with the Crime Victims Treatment Center, which is the place that I do a lot of work for, and on behalf. And yeah, they said this is so common that these cases, I don't know why, take freaking forever to ever get to court. Meanwhile, yeah, the survivor of that violence and those women who had to leave their jobs in order to do the right thing are all collateral damage. And Mr. Broccoli,
this is the artistic director's last name,
is still helming a theater where people are working underneath him. You know what I mean? It's infuriating. And I will say, as my last little bit of like, this is not about technology in theater, and this is my theater, the intersection of theater and advocacy for survivors of violence. When we were talking about this today, like, I will never be able to forget, in college, I had a very good friend who went to a different university. We went to high school together. She went to a different university, and she was sexually assaulted by a friend at a party. And it was, they were really good friends. So it was devastating. And I went up to help take care of her, like, in the week after it happened, and then would come back up, you know, every so often when she needed me. And I was up right after she went to the school court, the university court, and they told her it didn't happen, right? That is what happens when he's not found guilty, or she, right? In a case like this, is you are telling the survivor it didn't happen. And I remember sitting in the living room with her after that happened, and she'd also run into a friend of ours from high school at the pharmacy while she was fucking picking up like STD medicine just to make sure she didn't end up with an STD. And he saw her and it was bad. And she was just like, we got to talking about whether she was going to take legal recourse in like the state court outside of the university system. And she was like, I will not be told again. I cannot handle being told again that this didn't happen. And she never got justice for that. Never pursued it outside of the school court that one time. And that's not a singular story, right? It's like a very, very strong pattern that's what happens. So that's this story in particular, and that it was housed in a theater and is still being housed in a theater because of the ineptitude and the way we do or don't build good businesses in our theaters. It's just like, I think it's just heartbreaking.
I just had like a weird silver lining thought of like these women, going back to the question Jermaine asked of like, should they have stayed on and fought, or them, what they did choose to do, which was to leave, and now the uproar that's come of that. It's like the fact that this story made it out into the world,
yeah,
like I think that's kudos to them for making that decision, because it just made me think with your friend, like her story just, it died with that university board.
Yeah.
And like the reality of it. And now it just sort of like lives within her and with you and anyone she's sort of like confided in with that. But society looked at her and was like, that story isn't real. Like, stop telling it. Like, and just kind of like shutting it down and shutting her up. So at the very least, like these women leaving this organization, this theater, is helping to not allow that story to just get shut down.
Yeah, that's true. And I think someone in, I can't remember who, but in Clubhouse mentioned that, like, oh, I think it was Emily, right? Was like, we're like, there is light. We are coming back to something different because we're talking about, to your point, talking about this stuff more. And I can think of across the last 2 years in like just in Chicago alone, I'm thinking again about the person that I knew. There have been several artistic directors or people at the helm of theatrical organizations that have been ousted because of sexual assaults. And then this is public and we're talking about it in a Clubhouse room and asking curious questions, to your point, right? And realizing we don't know enough from this article, but like that act of curiosity and discussion and processing, I think is a step forward.
Yeah. I don't know what to say at this point.
Thanks for letting me talk more about that. I really step into the, I know Jermaine kept prodding and poking me because he knows like I would have opinions about that. But I was like, well, I'm going to derail this entire conversation away from where it probably should be for the sake of Clubhouse.
I feel like that's why this podcast exists.
Exactly.
What are the things that we didn't dive deeper into on the Clubhouse conversation? So
that's so true.
I'm glad. Thank you for sharing.
I have a question for you, because yeah, you mentioned earlier before we recorded, you were like, where was the technology today? Mm-hmm. And I actually just truly pose a question to you, which is like, we're making a Clubhouse show and we're talking about news and it's meant to be technology and theater. And like, what do you think about days like this when they, to my point, devolve into other conversations? And how do you think, as a person who's come from the news and media and tech world and might be like, more focused on, you know, where I'm like, the idea is the thing that matters, is the art that we make. You're maybe thinking about a
was
different
that a Christopher Walken impression. What was just happening?
No,
right there?
I have no idea. No, but I have a good Christopher Walken story for you sometime. Yeah, I'm just curious, like, actually, like, what do you think about these weeks and well, this is the first time that it's really gone off course.
Yeah. And to distill down what the question is, just so I understand, is that
I don't really know.
the name of the Clubhouse show is This Week in Tech and Theater or something like that. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so like the premise of it is the intersection of technology and theater. And so I think my initial feeling around it and the one that I shared with you, which is like, where was the tech today? Mm-hmm. Is like the compulsive rule follower in me that's like no, that this is a tech funny and theater conversation. There needs to be both.
Yeah.
So that's the first part. And then like I can quickly and fairly easily get over that, minus my desire to have the joke of like, where's the tech? But I do think that to your point of like, it's about the conversation that's being had. It's about engaging with the audience that comes into the Clubhouse room. It's about what's interesting in the space generally, which includes theater, which includes tech. And so I think like shifting one further into theater or further into tech on any individual day, or being like, this story, like we are making the editorial decision, in this case, Jermaine, making the editorial decision to highlight an article that he thinks is really important. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, what else is that space for? What else are those conversations for? Mm-hmm. I think if every week ended up shifting the lens towards, you know, specifically calling out artistic directors who are terrible people.
Broccoli.
Then maybe we should change the name of the podcast, change the name of the Clubhouse room. But no, I think like important conversations that need to be had, important stories that need to be told. That's what we can do, is provide the space for those and provide the insight. In this case, as much insight as we had from reading a single article.
I wonder, too, if like a little bit of the current, there's like such an imbalance right now because our network is so heavily theater folks. But like the intention for the Clubhouse room and this podcast has always been actually to also be a space for, we know so many people in technology and startups that are so passionate about the arts, right? We are a little bit imbalanced in that we've sort of created this incredible following of awesome theater makers from around the world that join us every week, but not as many technology people. So the likelihood that we're going to have a week where we're just on to the things that you and I would nerd out about, like that's just like straight up technology, are less likely right now, mm-hmm. you know?
I feel like those conversations, while I find them enjoyable, are like less enjoyable because I think your exact point of there's less audience interaction, there's less like communication, yeah. camaraderie, sharing of ideas and thoughts and feelings, because more of the people that we normally have in our clubhouse conversations are on the sort of inverse side of me, where they're like, oh, we're a little out of our depth, like, let's listen, this is interesting, let's ask a few questions, mm-hmm. but like mostly sort of stand back as someone who doesn't have the depth of experience from which to share something intelligent or intelligible. So yeah, flipping that balance probably isn't going to work for us in Clubhouse, but we could bring in some ringers maybe.
I don't think that's true. I was like, as someone who, and particularly before COVID, was like working, I'm so passionate and I believe the world is a better and more functional place if we bring together artists and entrepreneurs together. And I actually think it does, if it does work. I think if there were more technologists in there, right, we'd have a lively like discussion around everything, like if it was all on the tech side. And I personally believe that, like, that's my dream Clubhouse room at 1255. I cannot believe the people we've met through Clubhouse on the theater side. And then if we're able to attract like nerdy IT technology, that's like my dream situation, right? Because I think then we learn how to talk to each other. Like, we learn, as theater people stick around and listen to the talking about technology, and the technology people listen to the talking about theater. We already all have these intersections we don't even understand we have. So like, that's my,
yeah.
I want that world real bad.
Yeah, I think we just need to pull in a few more of those tech people, yeah. like you're saying, but yeah. hopefully tech people that are more similar to me, where it's, I have an interest and an investment and a little bit of a knowledge of that arts world, mm-hmm. to be able to be curious about it and not just like, oh, I sit behind a keyboard all day, every day, and I'm not going to engage with you theater weirdos.
Which was like today?
Exactly.
This is my favorite thing, speaking of theater weirdos, that Joe says frequently when we're like making plans and working on stuff for the business, is he's like, you keep talking like theater people are weird, but you have not been around engineers and startup people.
I think everyone's weird at the end of the day.
Probably.
And we're all just our own little type of weird. And I'm hoping that it mostly doesn't feel weird to the weirdos who are in their weirdness.
Before we wrap this up, let's take like a couple minutes just to hit on the good news of the day, which was that David Geffen just made going to the Yale School of Drama, which is now the David Geffen School of Drama at Yale, I think, maybe. Free. Just free. Fucking David Geffen, an angel. What? Amazing.
My head first jumped to, okay, he donated $150
million. 25, right?
Oh, he donated some amount of money. That is a lot of money that Jess is going to currently look up. But I was just like, okay, like, money doesn't go infinitely. Like, is this an endowment that, like, yes, kicks off?
Definitely.
Like, how is this going to work structurally? Like, dearest David Geffen's, you know, accountant or CFO or whatever, like, how does this actually work such that the money actually covers tuition for everyone forever?
You will be surprised to know that was actually my first thought too, funny enough, because that's not usually where my brain goes. But I actually founded a scholarship at my university, and so have like the benefit of understanding how the foundations work. And yeah, if you need, like, actually what's interesting, and I don't really know how this, you know, what, how the funds they invested in, you know, work and how you get to that point, but all you need is, at my university, is $5,000 to have a self-sustaining scholarship, basically, that never makes money. You know, you're giving away very little amounts. I think that was probably the $150 scholarship that Natalie was talking about. I founded that. But right, we raised $5,000 during college. That was 20 years ago. And it's still around. And it has about the same amount. I get reports, right? It has about the same amount of money in it that it had when we started. A little more, not much.
Got it. So it's somehow invested by,
yeah,
the university's endowment team, or whichever, yeah, team that is called, such that it is making gains, yeah, such that it can continue to pay out that scholarship each year, I'm assuming it goes.
Yep.
without going to zero.
Right, exactly. And I know that I was talking with our alumni team recently about another, like maybe endowing another foundation or scholarship to artists and entrepreneurs. What a surprise. And there's like a couple different funds depending on the starting level you put in at my university, which is like peanuts, by the way, compared to what we're talking about with David Geffen and Yale. So like, I just want to say that out loud, but yeah, so it's really cool. And with a drama school, unlike other departments, my guess is, you know how many people you're accepting in a class, right? Like places like Yale take, I don't know, whatever it is, 20 master's students, right? Like it's a finite in a way that's really planable.
Yeah. Yeah. They're not like just relying on like high matriculation numbers and seeing what happens and hopefully they move in. Oops, we don't have enough beds for everyone sort of situation.
Yeah.
I just Googled the number of students at the David Geffen School of Drama at Yale University. 194. Which is pretty high. And I'm not sure, masters or undergrads versus this is versus that. Who's included, who is not. But, you know, if it's basically displacing what, like $50,000-ish, how much does it cost to go anywhere anymore?
Well, they said didn't someone say $230,000 to go to Yale School of Drama?
Yikes. Yeah. So that's 194 times by 230,000 is $45 million.
Oh, it's, so tuition for all returning and future students in master's, doctoral, and certificates, tuition is $32,000 per year. So it doesn't cover then, like, it's usually double, right, isn't it, to, like, your housing and stuff like that?
Oof, even that, $32,000 a year for four years for 194 people is about $25 million.
It is no joke.
Which I guess if you're working off of $150 million that's floating in the economy and making the monies.
Your principles, decent. It's amazing, though. Although, and here's my uncharitable thought I had that I also was like, I don't think I'll share this because it's our upside article today, our glimmer of hope. My uncharitable thought was like, if you're getting your master's in drama from Yale, you have a job afterwards. Like, I don't know a whole bunch of Yale School of Drama grads who are like, I starved for 20 years and never made it. Like, your connections are as such, right? They're showcases, my favorite topic, showcases, right? Agents are very invested in picking up people from Yale School of Drama, right? Because it's so storied and you know, the education is amazing, right? The artist cultivation is incredible. But like, to Natalie's point today in Clubhouse, like, they're not the ones that are like, I think, egregiously pulling the wool over people's eyes, which are some of these BFA programs that do not hold their weight in what they're charging.
So wait, with the Yale School of Drama, is it not an undergrad program such that, like, if it's now being paid for, Yale can afford to as well be like meet blind on the admission and then as well allow more different people in, so you don't need to be a rich kid to get in or to afford it, I guess?
Well, this says that they're only master's, doctoral, and certificate.
Okay, so that's the answer there.
Yeah.
At least according to the New York Times.
Yeah. But even in universities, BFA programs, nothing, almost no school that has a BFA program just has open enrollment. Like, at most, anyone can sign up for the first year for a BFA, and then they start auditioning you out of the program. So you can't continue. It's just...
It's vicious.
Yeah, it's not great. Oh my God. Yeah, I did, even as early as me, like, and I was not at a conservatory. I had to audition three times. I could have been kicked out of our program three times.
That's so scary and so stressful.
Yeah, totally.
It's like standardized testing at the end of every year.
That's why I say to everyone, like, the best training for being an entrepreneur is being an actor.
Just constantly getting shit on.
Constantly. Never stops. Three times they could have kicked me out of the program. Four vocal juries where you have to sing a bunch of shit in front of a bunch of terrifying older vocal professors that don't even care about musical theater at all. Six auditions a year for plays and musicals where you get told no. I mean, wow. It's, and that's at 18. It only gets worse from there.
Do they give you your tuition back after that first year if they kick you out?
No.
I think that should be built into the model somewhere.
Can you imagine?
Where it's like pay to play.
Oh my God. It's just all problematic. But that being said, I want to end this conversation with the high note of David Geffen paying for everyone. And to your point that you were making, it does ensure that if an underserved person is one of the 20 best in the world and gets into Yale, they definitely can go. And that's amazing. I just think that's incredible.
Yeah, that is wonderful. I feel like Every university out there should have a rich benefactor.
David Geffen.
Give a bunch of money so that everyone can go for free. Oh, wait, that's just free education funded by the United States government. Dearest Bernie Sanders, St. Bernie, where are you? Like, especially once I think people wrap their head around the idea that, like, this $150 million commitment up front allows it to sustain itself.
Right.
As opposed to just, like, we're lighting money on fire.
Right. I never really thought about it that way. But, yeah, I'm, like, sitting here. I know how these foundations work. Yeah. No, you're right.
It's wild.
What do you guys think?
Whoa. Are you transitioning us?
Line.
That's wild. Should we flippy flop it?
No. Go ahead.
Well, like Jess just said, we would love to hear what you think. Visit us at our Twitter, BWI Unlocked.
And then, of course, our next conversation is Tuesday at 12:55 Eastern on Clubhouse. We sure would enjoy it if you joined us. You can raise your hand, jump in, and share your thoughts with our sassy band of co-hosts.
And if you'd like to join the Broadway Unlocked family, you can actually host a show with us on Clubhouse. So if you want to visit broadwayunlocked.com/ch, you can pitch us an idea. You can hit us up on Instagram directly with those great ideas. Back to Twitter, BWI Unlocked, using that hashtag TechTheaterCH. Just talk to us. We just want to hear what you think.
So we hope that you'll come join us at Clubhouse. Tweet at us. Say hi. And until then, we'll see you next week.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.